Good afternoon, Vashon. This is the Dove Speak Show, our live version of the show. This is our second one. My name is Chris Austin, and joining me is Betsy Archambault, the Executive Director of the Dove Project. What have you got for us today, Betsy?
Well, hello, and happy International Women's Day.
Oh, right. Of course.
And happy International Women's Day to all of the women on the island and the world. And I know that some people are striking today, and other people are wearing red today in solidarity. Don't look at my clothes. I forgot.
She's all in red. Great thing about radio.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sorry to say this. This one crept up on me, this Women's Day.
Oh.
How long have they had that? Do you know?
I don't know, actually. We could look it up.
Wait, yeah, there's no way to find out. No one knows. Well, so you wear red, and you said they're striking. Is this kind of like the immigrants where they didn't show up for work? And
yeah, the idea behind the women's general strike is that if women refuse to do all of their typical work that they do in a day, it will force people to notice how important and underappreciated that work is. And this is based on the fact that in the U.S., at least, women tend to do about 4 hours of unpaid work per day. And
really?
Men do about 50% of that. And so, while women are taking on more chores and childcare duties, women are also more likely to take on the tasks, I mean, at work that no one else wants to do. And then, you know, top it off here, that women tend to get paid less for all of this or not paid at all, hence the unpaid work part of this.
Right. You know, I don't know if you heard this, the European Parliament couple of days ago, they had a Polish representative stand up. He's an old man. And he got up and he had the audacity to say that women should be paid less because they're smaller, weaker, and less intelligent.
Oh my God, I missed that.
Yeah, and this is, you know, somebody that represents a lot of people, represents Poland in the European Parliament. And I've forgotten the woman that got up and, you know, gave him what for, deservedly so. And while it's true that physically women just genetically aren't as robust as a man, I don't know, what is it, 15% or something like that?
Yeah.
My thing is, well, how many jobs does it take that extra 15% of muscle or strength to do? Like, very few.
Right.
And nothing's ever been shown that women are less intelligent at all. And yeah, they're a little bit slight in frame compared to men, but no jobs, especially in the modern world, what jobs require that? So there's just no defensible reason that they should be paid less, I think.
Well, no, not even a little bit. And yet it continues, which is sad. And I mean, recently Iceland, women in Iceland had that strike. Was it Iceland or was it Sweden?
I can't remember.
That they walked out because of equal pay issues.
Or typically the it seems like the finger countries, Norway and Sweden and Finland, seem to be a bit more progressive in areas of that. As far as equal pay, is there a country that is better than others or has close to parity that you can think of, or all of them like that?
Well, I think Sweden is pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. I didn't print out the list for it today, but I also believe what you believe about the finger countries.
Yeah.
And Sweden really does stick out in my mind.
Well, I tell you this, in the U.S. military, if you can be a female Marine, you can do any damn thing there is to do.
Yes.
And they get equal pay in the Marine Corps and the service. I mean, that is your rank. That's what you get paid. Doesn't matter what gender you are. So if they can do it, how come other people can't?
Well, so this is interesting. So this is interesting to me. Maybe not interesting to everybody. But I was just reading a book about how in when people are negotiating for jobs and job salaries, men are, it's like 4-5 times more likely to negotiate for the package, the salary package that they want than women. And there are all sorts of reasons. And women don't want to seem pushy. They, you know, they're really happy they got the job. They don't want to push it too far. I mean, all of these different reasons, right? But it actually turns out that, because you could say, okay, women, let's, you know, let's buck up, right? I mean, I'm not good at this, right? I've never really been taught how to negotiate for that, right? And, but it turns out to be really in women's favor not to do that, because then what happens is if a woman does negotiate, then the hiring team sees her as really pushy, and they don't like her as much.
Right.
And then therefore, then she doesn't have as long a tenure at the place than people who just go along with the status quo. And so the kind of gut feeling that most women have around not negotiating actually is based in a fact that then they might not be, they might get that package, but they won't be there that long, because then that group of, you know, high up people won't like them because they were doing something for themselves. Now, the caveat in this is if you can come and negotiate as a we, right? And this, I think it takes practice. And so it's like, I'm, you know, I am negotiating for this package because my work is going to, you know, really benefit what you're doing and what they're doing and, you know, what these other people on the second floor are doing. And so you're talking about how you and everybody else are going to be working
the company.
Right. And then people are like, oh, you're doing this for other people. That's okay. You're asking for more money, you know, because of this connection with all these other people. And if you say, but if then, if again, if you just say, I want this because I have X and X and X qualifications, they're like, yeah.
Well, you know, a guy comes in and yells and screams and stomps his feet, and he's a go-getter. He's a, you know, tough guy. A woman does the exact same thing, and she's a bitch.
Oh, you know? Absolutely.
It's ridiculous. It's such a double standard.
It is. It is. I was reading another book this, last month, called The Confidence Code. And women, if you haven't read this book, go and get it. It's really a fascinating book, The Confidence Code. And it turns out that there's this, for women, there's a rule of 20. And so when, if you were to say, okay, Betsy, rate yourself on your math abilities, or, you know, language abilities or whatever, I would, for whatever reason, but it's all very, I mean, it's based in science, it's like a real thing, I would rank myself as 20% below my skill level.
Really?
And I can see how, I can see doing that. I do that. I'm sure that I do that because I don't want to be seen as...
as a braggart.
And be like, I'm really smart. I know math this well. Instead, you go, and I mean, it's also the same for apologizing before you say something, or giving the caveat of, you know, I'm not an expert in this, and this is what I think, because it gives you the out. And men don't tend to do that. Men say, this is what I think. And you think, oh, well, they must be right.
This is the way it is.
Then. But then, so when women rank themselves as 20% less skills, men tend to rank themselves as having 30% more skills.
Really?
And Yeah.
Is that all?
No, and Columbia University came up with a term for this. And then if you think about it, if women rank themselves as 20% lower and men rank themselves as about 30% higher, then you have a 50% gap, which I think really then, you know, kind of, it, you know, it has normalized why women are paid less or valued less in these jobs, because really culturally people kind of think this. If women, you know, do rank less and men tend to rank more, I mean, it also looks like that in the government. I mean, if you really think about it, if you're like, well, you know, if this man is really 50% better than this woman because of X, Y, or Z kind of cultural things that are tinging around in your brain, then it makes sense. It's so strange.
So I don't want to spend the whole show on this because we had that you brought in this wonderful book. But when you're getting hired, does it matter if the hiring person, the gender, are hiring women more likely to sense that, oh, she's underrating herself?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
But
we're stumped.
Yeah, we're stumped. But yeah, anyway, you know, women, they have incredible social, economic, cultural, and political impacts in the country.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, I think to these cultures that you know, where the woman is a second class citizen, can't drive a car, can't leave the house without a, you know, male escort or relative or whatever, you are just denying so much of their energy, their intellect, their ideas, and all that's gone to waste.
Yes.
It's just ridiculous. It's just taken half your population you know, they're not using them. I don't know. It just boggles my mind.
So I think about this actually quite a lot. And do you know the term a human capital?
I don't.
And so human capital is, it's in a term from economics where you're kind of measuring the economic worth and value impact of humans because of what they bring to the table, right? And I think of all of this in terms of you're losing women's human capital almost globally. Because if you think, okay, a lot of these girls are not able to move on from elementary school because in some countries they're married very young, or they are expected to be the caretaker for their younger brothers or parents or this or that. And then you think about it and you're like, how many problems do we have in this world? Like way too many, way too many problems. And then you think, and really, is it only up to this select few people to actually think about what the solutions to those problems are? Because part of the beautiful thing about diversity is that people with different perspectives come at problems in a different way. And so what if the person that is going to find the cure for HIV, what if she is a young African girl?
Exactly.
What if she is an untouchable girl in India? And we will never, ever know, because we are not capturing or harnessing any of the wonderful human capital that they have to offer. And shame on this whole entire planet for doing that. We have enough things that we need to work on that we do need all hands on deck. And it's just, it boggles my mind as to why we're still fighting for this.
Exactly. You know, it's such a cultural thing, in like you said, the caste system in India. I mean, that, I don't know how you get out from under something like that. As far as, you know, it seems even women in that those castes kind of agree that they shouldn't be. You know, the older women are like they're not encouraging the young ones to get out and, you know, seek their own fame and fortune, I guess.
Well, because it's dangerous in many in many cases.
You know, if you stray too far, then you've dishonored the family, and it's an honor killing or something like that. I just think it's such a hard nut to crack to bring down those barriers, which seems so simple to us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this person was just born. They happen to be in this caste or in this, you know, situation, but they had no input into being born like that.
No.
Yet they're just, they're filled with all these prejudices before they're even out of the womb.
Absolutely. So, I know, I actually do have this really cool book.
And, now I'm bummed.
So when I was doing my thesis, I did it on women parliamentarians in Nepal who were part of the group that was writing the new constitution,
mm-hmm.
right? And they had the Constituent Assembly, it was called, this group, and there were women from all over Nepal. There were women that were from very wealthy families, very well educated, educated abroad, multilingual, with other European languages, not just dialects in Nepal. And one woman will always stand out in my memory because she was a slave. And wow. When from the far west region of Nepal, and her parents were slaves, her grandparents were slaves, she was married to a man who was slave, and their children were slaves. That's it.
Wow.
That's what you got. And she started acting out, but by saying, I deserve better than this. And I think that we should have a voice even though we're slaves, right? And her husband actually took her then to the middle of the town and pulled her by the hair and beat her. And so even though she was a slave, she was still completely under the power and control of her husband, who then punished her for saying that they should have a voice. And this woman ended up coming to be part of the Constituent Assembly. And she didn't know how to read or write, and she marked her name with an X. And so she did all of this crazy constitution stuff during the day and learned about it from all of these international experts that came by. And then at night, she went to school to learn how to read and write.
Wow.
And at the end of this, I asked her, well, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once the Constitution is written, and therefore you don't really have this job in Parliament anymore, what are you going to do? And she said, well, what are my other skills now? I know how to write a Constitution. I'm going to have to go back and be a slave. And you think, oh my gosh. And so the kind of nut to crack then, I mean,
yeah.
Like she got out of it, and like you think, oh, that nut is cracked.
Sure.
She is now doing this, and she has eyes on her, and she has a voice. And then you're like, oh, psych, gotta go back.
Yeah.
Really complex problem.
I'm telling you, what she should have put in the Constitution was no slavery.
Well, actually, I mean, there is no slavery thing. But what happened was when Nepal abolished slavery, they didn't put other infrastructure in place to be able to support
really?
The people that were then coming out of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they had no money and no home and no food. And so while it was this great thing, then they didn't give any resources to anybody for them to be able to start anew.
So that's like the U.S. slave that became the sharecropper mm-hmm. after emancipation, and they had no resources, so they were indentured to the
right.
slave owner, but in all but name.
Right, because they still want food and
mm-hmm.
a house for, you know, their elderly parents and
sure.
kids, and they gave them a way out on paper, but not really.
Right. Mm. Interesting.
So we're really cheery today, Chris. I gotta tell you.
International Bummer Day. Well, let's change the mood here. Actually, yes, by telling who we have to thank.
Yes.
We would like to thank the support for Voice of Vashon programming comes from KVSH FM founding underwriter John L. Scott, Best People, Best Results, and the Vashon Loop. VOV support is provided by the Vashon Loop, Islanders' alternative newspaper offering free news, information, arts, and entertainment from the people since 2001. It's your chance to get into the loop. www.vashonloop.com.
Cool. Now, I realize we only have a few minutes left of our show.
It goes fast, doesn't it?
It really does go fast.
Oh, man.
So I got this book the other day, and it's called Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. And I'm a little bit completely in love with this book. And it is 100 Tales of Extraordinary Women. And the people that wrote this book, they said, it's important that girls understand the obstacles that lie in front of them. And it's just as important that they know that these obstacles are not insurmountable. That not only can they find a way to overcome them, but they can remove those obstacles for those who will come after them, just like these great women did. And so I thought, in honor of International Women's Day, these are fairly short stories that we share a few stories about some of the women who have come before us and done amazing things. So,
is Mary Anning in there? I think that's her name.
No. Oh, yes. Yes.
You've heard the children's rhyme, "She sells seashells by the seashore"?
Yes, of course.
That was Mary Anning. That was a real person.
Oh.
And she was a wonderful paleontologist, just very gifted.
Would you like to read her story?
Oh, jeepers.
Sorry. she was actually one of the people that I had checked to read her story.
Oh, is that right? Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're linked psychically today, Chris.
Mary Anning, born in 1799, died in 1847. In a tiny, cramped house on the south coast of England, there lived a girl called Mary. Her house was so close to the sea that sometimes the storms would flood it. The winds and storms that swept along the coast often revealed fossils in the cliffs along the shoreline. These are the remains of prehistoric plants or animals that died a long time ago. Mary could not go to school because her family was too poor, but she taught herself to read and write. She studied geology to learn more about the rocks, and anatomy to learn more about skeletons of the prehistoric animals she found. One day she saw a strange shape jutting out of a rock. Mary took out her special little hammer and carefully chipped away at the rock. Bit by bit, she uncovered a 30-foot-long skeleton.
Wow.
It had a long beak, but it wasn't a bird. Rows of sharp teeth, but it wasn't a shark. Flippers, but it wasn't a fish. And a long, thin tail that was the first ever discovered of that kind of dinosaur fossil. And she named it ichthyosaur, meaning fish lizard. At the time, people believed that the Earth was only a few thousand years old. Mary's fossils helped prove that there had been life on our planet for hundreds of millions of years. Scientists from all over the world would come to see Mary, the self-taught scientist who loved walking by the sea. Very interesting.
I love that story.
Yep. So she would sell these little baubles during the tourist season, and that's how she made a little money. And there'd be a big storm, and she would go out, and she'd find out, because it would erode away all the rocks. And she'd find these fossils. And the eminent scientists of the day would all come to see her and learn about what she'd found. Very inspiring woman.
Absolutely. I'm glad that she's in here. I have another story about I don't know exactly what term I'm supposed to use, more modern woman, Jessica Watson. And she is a sailor.
Really?
And she was born in 1993, the year that I graduated from high school, in Australia.
Wow. Okay.
So once upon a time, there was a girl called Jessica who was afraid of water. One summer morning, Jessica was playing with her sister and cousins by the pool. At one point, the other children lined up on the side and got ready to jump in together holding hands. Jessica's mom watched from the window to make sure Jessica was okay. She expected Jessica to step back from the side, but was amazed to see her daughter step forward with the others. One, two, three, splash! All the kids landed in the water, shouting and laughing. From that day on, Jessica started loving the water. She joined a sailing club and decided to sail around the world on her own without stopping. She painted her boat bright pink and christened her Ella's Pink Lady. She packed the boat with steak and kidney pies, potatoes, cans and cans of beans, 150 bottles of milk, and lots of water, and set sail from Sydney Harbor. She was just 16 years old. All on her own, Jessica sailed onward. She fought against waves as tall as skyscrapers. She woke up to the most beautiful sunrises, spotted blue whales, and watched shooting stars above her boat. 7 months later, she arrived back in Sydney. Thousands of people turned out to greet her. They rolled out a special carpet for her, bright pink, just like her boat.
Wow, that is incredible.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
I mean, that I can't think of any endeavor that more shows self-reliance than a solo sailing trip. I mean, there is nobody going to help you.
Oh my God, I don't think I could sail around Vashon. I mean, really. I would be stuck out there. You know.
Watch out for the Chet Smoka. It tends, likes to run.
No, don't take a nap out there. Here, I'm going to give you another one. This is a woman that a lot of people have been talking quite a lot about these days.
This is a Supreme Court Justice, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and she was born in 1933. Once upon a time, there was a girl who dreamed of becoming a great lawyer, a lady lawyer, people would mock her. Don't be ridiculous. Lawyers and judges are always men. Ruth looked around her and saw that they were right, but there's no reason why that shouldn't change, she thought to herself. She applied to the Harvard Law School and became one of its brightest students. Her husband, Marty, was also a student at Harvard. Your wife should be home baking cookies and looking after the baby, people used to say, but Marty didn't listen. Ruth was a terrible cook. And besides, he loved taking care of their daughter and was proud of his brilliant wife. Ruth was passionate about women's rights and argued 6 landmark cases of gender equality before the United States Supreme Court. But she became the 2nd female Supreme Court justice in the country's history. There are 9 justices on the Supreme Court. If I'm asked, when will there be enough women on the Supreme Court? I say, when there are 9. People are shocked, but there have been 9 men like forever, and nobody ever raised their eyebrow at that. Even in her 80s, Ruth does 20 push-ups every day and has become a style icon thanks to her extravagant collar she wears with her judge's robes. Huh.
Wow.
I got something I bet you didn't know. My mother was a lawyer, born in 1919, and she was one of the first 300 lawyers in the state of Tennessee, and it's called in the Pioneers Club. And, she was graduated like 1939 or something.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm really proud of that.
Yeah. There are awesome women all around us.
That is very true. And, you know, having a lawyer as a mom is can be awesome, but hard to argue with.
I can imagine that. I can imagine.
It was
that.
Way past the I said so argument.
Right. Well, I think we're almost out of time for the day.
We are. We got a few minutes here, but I'd like to get your opinion and how, if you're a young mother, how would you advise them to encourage their young daughters to be strong, to be independent, to ask questions? It was something like this. I think this is that book is just a wonderful idea to kind of set kids off to sleep with. But anything else that you would recommend?
Well, I do think that representation matters. And to be able to see women in all of these different positions,
right,
in traditionally male fields, you know, aviation or, you know, being astronomers, astronauts. I don't know where astronomer came from. You know, and politicians as well. And a lot of these fields have been male, traditionally male, for such a long time that it's hard for women to even think that they could have a spot there because they can't, they've never seen it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think this book is awesome because it does show women all doing all sorts of different things, and not all of them are going to resonate with your daughter. I read this stuff, maybe a little bit too forcefully to my to my children, and largely they're like, oh, "Okay, Mom, thanks for this A is for activist book." But then, you know, every once in a while, one story, well, they'll be like, "Was that really real?"
Yeah.
And so they are listening. Even if they're kind of rolling your eyes and doing something else while you're telling them about it. But I also, I want to say on this International Day of Women that that there aren't enough women politicians in the United States or even in the state of Washington. And I feel like that matters too, because just like I was saying earlier about different perspectives,
right,
women have different perspectives on things, and not always better. I'm not saying that, I'm just saying different. And so I would like to encourage any woman out there who has ever thought about running for office, local office, well, we don't really have a lot of local offices here, you know, or county or state, to really think about doing that, because we need those different perspectives and we need those women to go forward and continue breaking those glass ceilings. And we need those women. I need those women. But then, I mean, my girls need those women. And their girls are going to need those women. And not just girls, but boys too.
Yeah.
There doesn't have to be this giant polarization.
Like, I can absolutely see a young boy being enthralled with that story of the woman that went around the world in her sailboat.
Absolutely.
The gender really doesn't matter. It's a unbelievable feat, no matter what. I remember being asked if a woman could